Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
Hey, everybody. This is Elise Glink, and I'm sitting in for Steve Bertrand today in the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you so much for joining me. We have a great show today. We have got two marketing mavens sitting here with me, John Byrne, who I co-host Monday Morning Marketing with Elise Glink and John Byrne on WGN Plus, and Tom Gimble of the LaSalle Network, who sits in, I think, is it every Friday?
Every Friday.
So you're here and you get to be, you know, here longer with us.
It's perfect.
Which is really nice. And then a little bit later on, we have Beth McCausland from UNICEF. There is an amazing new program kicking off called Kid Power on Monday. And 6,000 Chicago kids in school are going to be doing it. She's going to stop by and tell us all about it and why this is going to save the world. It's cool stuff.
World being saved is a good thing.
Yeah, world being saved. I would love for that to happen on a regular basis.
And soon.
It is 12:11, kind of a cloudy, cool day. We wanted to talk a little bit about marketing. So, John Byrne, you know, we sit in with Steve on Thursdays. That's a lot of fun. Tom, you talk about, I'm sure I haven't heard your segment, but I guess it's marketing, branding.
Yeah, marketing, SEO. Branding, business, and how that affects. And then when we combine general business and sales, and which kind of all coincides with how well the marketing does.
Well, let's talk about old school marketing. We were sitting in the green room talking about how companies still rely on old school marketing, but maybe to their detriment. Why don't you kick things off? Tell me when you think about old school marketing, what do you think that somebody is doing that maybe doesn't work so well with today's world?
Well, I think it's how you combine it and where you leverage it. And are you going to have multiple brands, one online, one in print? Are you having hardcore brochures combined with business cards? And does that logo and format and the content in your brochure mirror up with what's online? And then are you leading people to where you want to go through search engine optimization? And are the keywords that line up with your brand going to link back to the web? And so when I always think of old school marketing, I think of stuff you can hold and feel and touch. I don't know if you disagree with that.
Oh, I hate brochures, but right. You're exactly right.
And that's where it is. And the funny thing is, I see it from, you know, a client perspective. I see it from as a CEO of a company perspective. Is there's still something to it though that people believe when they can hold something, you're real. And when you can delete something, they think, where does it exist? There's still that old school buyer out there. It's crazy as crazy as it sounds.
Well, but you also have this idea where sometimes it's, you know, you need an old school thing because you're such a digital business. So I have a client for my digital agency and, you know, they needed a book, like a physical book, because they were just an online company. And so there was nothing for somebody to have a takeaway that would mean anything.
And I think the whole, and also people don't view, when you go in with a laptop or you're going to hook up your computer to their wireless network and do a presentation on a video screen or a TV.
Swipe from your iPad.
Right. Even the iPad, people just look and they're like, oh, this is a big production. Where you go old school every once in a while, it's kind of like writing a handwritten note. We all like to get the handwritten note.
God, I hate what comes in my mail. Especially this time of year where it's like 25, you know, political direct mail pieces, which is about as old school as you can get,
yep,
right?
But so why are they still doing it, though?
Why?
I can tell you why.
Why?
Because they're old. Because people
because
who are
the people
business,
running the political things
people
are
who are running businesses in general are of a different generation than the people coming up. I got to tell you, I don't think that within 10 years, paper is going to be something that's used on a regular basis at all. I think millennials are coming in. They have no interest in paper. They don't even know what it is. They don't know how to talk about it. I mean, we all have kids in school who are in high school or younger.
Yep.
I mean, they're all on iPads. They don't have books anymore.
No, they don't look at newspapers.
It's funny you say that because I went home. I've been out of town in the past few days. Went to the mailbox. I opened it up and there's literally 25, 30, 40 pieces.
Yeah.
And
of junk.
From four candidates.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's not like there's 50 candidates. From four candidates. And my initial thought was, God, this is like the old, you know, when you go to the printer, right? Oh, it's four color technology. And I'm sitting there going, what are these people? I mean, they're actually paying. They're better off doing it in black and white and doing it at a quarter of the size because it still ends up in the garbage. But you just want the name recognition.
I'm not sure that it's doing anything for any of them, but they're all bigger. Have you noticed this year, the innovation this
bigger.
Year is that they are much, they're oversized. They're all, it's not 8.5 by 11.
But
here
you know
I am
who's
waving,
benefiting?
As if you at home could see me waving these
right.
pieces of paper.
You know who's
but,
benefiting from that is the post office, though.
Okay, so we're saving the post office every 4 years.
The politician's got to save something.
I don't know.
Well, they're recouping the Lance Armstrong investment, right?
Right.
So we got to let's bring it back to steroids and humor.
I don't know. So let's take politics for an example. We've got the primary coming up. There's some hotly contested races. I know. And we're seeing all the old school stuff.
Right.
What's a new school thing that politicians should be doing to get our attention?
Well, I'll tell you one of the more interesting thing, and just going off of last night, right? The debacle that was last night on television.
Did they actually start beating each other up on stage? That's what it felt like.
It's if anybody
throwing a punch or
yeah,
two.
I mean, it's ridiculous, right?
Right.
But the irony of what technology does and where it goes is that, and I don't know if you guys saw this online and actually keyed it in to do it, but when Jeb Bush, they didn't renew their domain name.
Oh, yeah.
And Trump got it. And
oh,
it directed
hello.
To Trump.
Yep.
And Ted Cruz is TedCruz.org because TedCruz.com goes to a, you know, move to Canada. So I think there is something
right.
from the technology side of what we're seeing.
Absolutely.
Of that you know, for good, bad, or otherwise of how crazy Trump is, that where they're at from jumping on things so quickly.
Well, it's to the speed of light now, because even
right.
today or last night, Trump tweeted out something that misspelled honor or something.
Yeah.
And today, Cruz or one
Rubio
of the other
or,
Rubio,
yeah.
one of them said, you know, why do you even want a guy who can't spell? I mean, now we're down to like correcting grammar
right.
and spelling.
And the flip side.
Well,
is,
that's better than calling them fat, ugly, old, and
right.
whatever.
right.
You know, I mean, there's like other things you could call somebody rather than a bad speller. Well, and they have.
Well, and the flip side of it, though, is you go back and you want to combine old school and new school. Then they're photoshopping Rubio's face on the body of, you know.
Right.
So they're Photoshop, you know, that became big. 10 years ago?
I know.
Right?
If not more.
If not more, that people would talk about is a photo real or not, and that's still being done by somebody.
I just think there are a whole lot of lessons on what not to do in this campaign.
Absolutely.
For every business that's listening to us today.
Well, I think part of it too, though, if you think about it, is the reason that the politicians are struggling with all these different ways to market is because and again, to the generational thing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's too many generations to cover that communicate differently, and there's not one medium now that has it's a plurality of media, so to speak, and you can't reach your market on just one media, and I think.
I agree with you 100%.
Well, when I look at what's coming in my mailbox and I look at the phone calls, the robocalls that we've been getting mm-hmm. and things, I have to say the one thing that stood out, I picked up one of those calls. I normally don't. We're eating dinner. And, you know, the rule in our family is if you're calling at dinner and you're some sort of a robo company, we're just rude to you. We're not nice. I'm sorry. We're eating dinner. We're having family time. But anyway, one of the candidates called and I was just about to be rude and she went, hello, this is, and then it was the candidate's mother calling and it really was her. And I was
clever.
Like, oh, it's the mom.
Right.
And then so I was nice to her. Yeah. It was really her mom. And I had read that it was the mom's birthday. And I was like, oh, is it really your birthday today?
Something
said,
different, right?
It is. And I said, well, happy birthday, mom. Now I'm going back to having dinner with my family. But, you know, I was so much
yeah.
nicer to her because it was an authentic call. It was a real person. And she was like, oh, you know, like, I have no idea if that was really the mom, but it sounded good.
Well, I think, you know, one
I think it was the mom. I'm just saying, wait, go ahead.
It could have been my mom. Could have been somebody
That's
else's
who
mom
it was.
Out. It was
no.
somebody's mom.
Somebody's mom, and it
somebody's
made me feel
mom.
Like it was the candidate's mom, and all that made me feel good.
I think we have a market opening, by the way.
Yeah.
Candidate moms.
All right, it's 12:18. Let's take a check with Traffic Trouble Spot with Dolly McCarthy. Hey, everybody. It's Elise Glink. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. We've got John Byrne and Tom Gimbel in the studio with me. You can follow me on Facebook at my Elise Glink fan page or at Glink on Twitter. And John and I co-host Monday Morning Marketing, which is a great podcast all about the stuff we're talking about now with even more fireworks. Right, John? Even
Absolutely.
More, even more fireworks than you can find.
Everyone's like the 4th of July.
Yeah, it is. All happy and stars and stripes. WGN Plus. Tom is the CEO and founder of the LaSalle Network. We were talking about old school marketing and politics and the fact that when one of the candidates' moms called me, I kind of liked it. I know, it's weird.
I don't know. My mom calls me sometimes, and I don't take her calls. So you're a better child.
And
than
I never call my mother.
Because I took somebody else's mother's. I didn't know it was going to be the mom. All right. So let's talk a little bit about SEO, because if old school stuff is direct mail and oversized political announcements and whatever, new school's got to be search engine optimization, search engine marketing, anything that has to do digital. And usually Google is at the front of that. So when you're talking to people or with your own business, right? Keywords are everything.
Oh, there's absolutely no doubt about it. And it's funny because, you know, as John and we were talking a few minutes ago, it's old school, but it's been around for 15 years, right? So
And 5 minutes after it started, everybody was an expert.
Right. Absolutely.
How cool was that?
Right. Oh, I can build a website and I can program it and I can do HTML. It's easy.
Yeah. No problem. And it's just that they change it every 5 minutes.
Well, and the biggest challenge we're seeing isn't even getting companies that to understand SEO and keywords, but it's getting them that when they redo their website, I can't tell you how many companies that their whole SEO platforms messed up.
Right.
Because they use a different company for round two than for round one, and all of the work and effort that they put in to establish their brand and get followers and the keywords, now they've lost it.
Right.
Right. There's something that goes wrong when you transport over and you end up with 404 errors all over the place, which is what happens when you go to a page and it's not there anymore. So you have to constantly look at that. You also have a problem with companies saying, let's see, what's the best way to game Google, where Google is switching its algorithm and and you really have to have somebody who stays up on that. But it's not like they give you advance notice and they don't tell you what the keys to the castle are.
And the interesting thing about Google and their algorithm is that they've actually never released anything that really says what it is. It's all hinted around the edges.
Right, because why would we want to tell you?
Exactly.
Then you wouldn't pay us.
Right, and you'd have to just keep figuring it out and throwing, you know, spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks.
Well, now Google's got an interesting thing. So I got an email from them saying, if you spend X amount of money with us, we will show you how to get the most amount for your money and do the best and get the most search engine up, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, oh, so now they're getting into the consulting business.
Right. It's vertical marketing.
Yeah, well, I mean, and they'll do whatever they want to do whenever they want to,
and
they'll
just
buy somebody,
anyway,
right?
But...
they'll buy Publicis before the day's over, probably, right? But I think that, you know, when you get into the marketing aspect of it, it's also how companies prepare their sales function and their go-to-market. So you can spend a ton of money or a little bit of money on a website and SEO market, but what do you do with the leads that you generate? Do you watch where your traffic spikes based on your advertisements? If you're doing ads, old school classified ads on job boards or in marketing publications or whatever, in trade publications, are you watching the data analytics for where the spike in traffic is and when you're doing your movements? And I think that's the secondary part that any company, we'll spend money on SEO and do it, but we're not really following where the fluctuations are.
Yeah, right. There's definitely a break after what happens when you know, the strategy seems to just fall off a cliff, right? Yep. And John and I are huge strategy people. We do it for our clients. We talk about it on Monday Morning Marketing. This idea that strategy has to go sort of end to end. It's the life cycle of whatever achieving your goals happen to be. And for most companies, they're looking for conversion or they're looking to acquire new leads. So it's lead generation, or they're looking to educate a population to a particular result, or they're looking for a brand extension. But understanding what that goal is and then reverse engineering the strategy to a place where it actually makes sense is how you don't end up throwing good money after bad.
Well, and Tom's point is one that we shouldn't let fly by is metrics, right? Look at the stuff that if you're tracking stuff, look at it.
Yeah.
And you should be tracking stuff.
Well, and companies cheap out, right? So they spend the money on the front end and they decide, you know what? We don't need to use your firm Elise anymore for the back end.
Right.
We got from A to M and we can do this. And then like all companies, there's a shortage of brain. Right? There's these tasks that most companies have that are more advanced than somebody who has no experience. But the people who can really do a great job don't want to be doing some of the tasks.
Right.
Right. They're the air
they
quotes
all want to be you. They want to be CEO.
No.
Everybody
want
wants
airline.
To.
But I think it comes down. Right. So there's this happy medium of the right person.
All right. 28 minutes past the hour. We have Tom Gimbel, CEO and founder of LaSalle Network. You stick around for another one?
Would love to. Thanks
All
for
right.
having me.
And John Byrne, we will talk to you guys in just a minute. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Be right back. And welcome back, everybody, to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand. He'll be back next week. You can follow me on Twitter at Glink and listen to our Monday Morning Marketing podcast on WGN+. And I've got John Byrne, my co-host, with me here, and Tom Gimbel, who is the founder and CEO of the LaSalle Network. We've been talking a little bit about politics, and Chris Christie apparently just endorsed Donald Trump. Is that right? Is that what you just read?
That's what I just read.
All right, then.
Yikes.
Okay.
And the game continues.
From a marketing perspective.
Christie has a bridge to block for you, but anyway.
Oh, yeah. Well, it continues to get more and more interesting.
I was telling John earlier, for my kids, it's actually been beneficial, the circus that exists, because they're engaged.
Oh, so
engaged. They want to talk about it. They want to know what's going on.
Do they like Sanders? Because everybody under the age of 16 seems to really like Sanders.
We don't want to go there with me, but that's a whole other conversation.
I didn't ask about you. I asked about your kids.
No, they're torn. They're torn. So I don't know.
I see.
Yeah, they don't know. They ask me, and truthfully, the hardest thing is to say, you know what, guys? I don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
That's
I can rule out
one.
It really is process of elimination. You rule out the two, you know you won't.
Well, I think we can all agree that Trump knows how to brand himself better than any of the others.
No doubt about it.
Without a doubt, he is the king of branding. But today, this was sort of funny, I thought. Cruz and Rubio are out there, and they're doing everything they can, right? So they came out with a list of all the things that Trump has failed at. Trump vodka. They're like, who remembers Trump vodka? And some guy went, me! And they're like, you're the only one. That's why it's gone. Trump University. I remember when Trump University came out and they reached out to me to ask if I wanted to pay them to be a teacher of real estate in Trump University. And I said, you just have that so backwards. No. No. That's not going to work for me. And it didn't work for them either. So there was this whole long list of failed things that Trump had branded his name on. And then, of course, there's the things that have worked.
Well, I think that really ties into the conversation of marketing and branding, right? Because what's appealing to the two extremes, Trump and Bernie, is they talk, you know, relatively like normal people. They're not on the same talking
Absolutely.
Points over and over and over again.
Right.
And that's where Rubio got crushed.
Yep.
But you have polar opposites in what they believe economically between Bernie and Trump. But even with my own kids and people I work with and clients, you talk about things and right, wrong, or otherwise, they just say what's on their mind. And that's why the lunacy of the things that Trump says are appreciated. Oh, you know what? At least he's honest. At least he says what he's thinking.
Yeah, he does say what he's thinking. That's a little bit scary, but
absolutely.
But
shooting from the lip is not a good thing if you're president.
Oh no! I'm not condoning it. But my point
is that's
appealing to people from a brand.
It absolutely is appealing, and I think it's consistent with his brand. What I think has been a problem for all of the candidates is the inconsistency of brand and the brand expectation. And I think for all of you business people listening at home or at the office, you know, having a consistency of brand is so important. People need to know what to expect from you, from your product, from your service, from your company, whatever it's going to be. And if you're not delivering that, whether it's in the advertising that you're running, in the service that you're providing, when somebody picks up the phone, if they call you, if there is brand inconsistency, it's very jarring for the person who's on the receiving end.
And what a lot of companies, the mistake that a lot of companies make is only the marketing team knows what the marketing campaign is.
Right.
They don't communicate it to accounting, to legal, to the customer service department, to all these
other
people.
Or they've said it once and they think that's enough.
They slap the logo on an envelope, right?
Yeah, it just doesn't work. You know, and I think that when you have that mismatch of expectations with what is actually happening, right, in the actual service department, you end up getting customers who are confused. And when customers are confused, not only do they not buy, they disappear.
So I was at a speech, a presentation yesterday, and there were two schools of thought. And one was the Facebook way of try and don't worry about the result. You want to succeed, but just try. Let's just try whatever we can.
A/B testing.
And Apple's is perfection. So
the try also falls into one thing I always criticize is random acts of marketing. I mean, A/B testing sometimes is just as random as anything else, in my opinion.
I don't disagree with you, but two huge companies,
right.
Enormous success and cash, piles of cash, right? And they view things of how they go to market completely differently.
So what's the lesson for somebody who's in a business, you know, here? If we're suggesting that one way is a better way to go than another, how do you decide which way is the way to go, right? The crystal clear marketing, branding, logo, everything's done from the get-go, or Do you do A-B testing or ABC testing and you try to figure out what's going to work best for you? How do you do that without breaking the brand?
I think you're also sort of jumping the gun because you have to go out and figure out what your perception is in the marketplace first before you can even get to the testing part, right?
Absolutely.
You know, you need to figure out what are people saying about you? What are their expectations?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're meeting them, great, then you've got a brand. If you're not meeting them and you're getting all sorts of other sort of chatter in the marketplace about who you're, what type of service you provide or how bad your service is, then you've got to then address that and understand that whatever brand you might have had isn't your current brand. Because the brand is, to finish off, the brand is the what the perception of the marketplace is, right? It's
In your brain, what you think it is one thing. What everybody else thinks is the reality.
Exactly.
Absolutely. And it's really the true metal of a CEO. What she's doing behind closed doors, and then when you open up the kimono, so to speak, to the company. And so you're going to, if the CEO likes marketing and is engaged in marketing, then they're going to be more involved. And if they're not, then they delegate and then they fire and turn over. And so you've got people that you hire to come in as experts, either internal or externally outsourced, to come in and they have your ear. But then how you communicate that to the company. And so often you get people that want to silo. Finance wants to silo. They don't want anyone to know what's going on.
Right.
Human resource wants to silo. And marketing wants to silo because they don't want too many people telling them how to do their job. Well, when you silo during the process, you're not updating anybody. They don't feel engaged. When you roll out a new marketing strategy, they don't care because they weren't involved at all. And the CEO has to be the one to set the leadership to say, getting input is different than doing what everybody wants. There's a very fine line between those two.
Right.
Things.
Well, it's the CEO. You have to be the final, you know, the buck stops with you. It's your buck.
Yep.
So it stops there.
But you have to mediate. Yes. And you have to mediate to get people's opinions and then not make them feel that their opinions aren't valued when you're not doing what they suggest.
Right. You asked me, why aren't you following me?
Yep.
Right. Well, mm-hmm. That's a culture that you set up in your organization, is that we will listen but you aren't always going to be followed.
Right.
Well, and that goes to Elise's point of the image you have internally of what the marketing is in your head and how it goes to market. Well, there's really three. There's the person who creates the strategy and what they want it to be, how it's viewed internally, and then how it goes to market.
Right.
There's three different perceptions, but that's a CEO's job. They've got to want to be engaged.
Right.
You might not understand the data analytics, like John said, but you've got to understand it.
And they also have to be patient, because marketing is, you can't just switch marketing like just at the drop of a hat.
What about companies that put in like an M&A guy as the CMO? I have been watching companies, they decide everybody's got to have experience in all these things, and so you take the guy who was the head of M&A, and now suddenly he's the CMO, and he's in charge of marketing. He's never marketed a day in his life. He doesn't really believe in it. Now what do you do?
It's not a religion. You don't have to believe in it. It works. It's a discipline. That's the thing that drives
me crazy. But everybody throws the Hail Mary. Is that not really? No.
I think it's a testament to the quality of the individual professionally, because I think you see it sometimes with big firms with finance, right? They'll have a rotational program there too, and in sales as well. The key is how strong of people, of lieutenants, do they surround themselves with? And if the finance person is just a person who's in lieu of the CEO approving or disproving off of what talented people feed them, then it's okay. When they want to go in and be the CMO, literally, you've got a problem.
That's so true. All right, 12:45, we're going to take a quick break. I've got John Byrne and Tom Gimbel with me. Tom, thank you so much for being with us today.
Great being with you both.
He is the CEO and founder of the LaSalle Network. And John, I think we're going to say goodbye to you as well.
I'm off.
Until Monday for Monday Morning Marketing.
Exactly.
And how do people find you?
How do people find me? They find me on Twitter or thebyrneblog.com.
All right. And Tom, I assume thelasallenetwork.com?
You've got that right. And at Tom Gimbel on Twitter.
All right. Thanks so much, guys. We'll do it again soon. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more WGN.
The girl.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Gling, filling in for Steve Bertrand. I have a very special treat for you. Beth McCoslin is the Deputy Director of Major Gifts at UNICEF Fund for UNICEF. She works across the street, and as most of you know, or if you listened to me last year, I was the co-host for the Chicago Humanitarian Awards for UNICEF, which was very exciting. I'm going to do it again this year.
Thank you.
And Beth, I asked Beth to join me today because on Monday, UNICEF Chicago is kicking off a really cool program called Kid Power.
Yes, we're so excited. We're thrilled to be bringing the UNICEF Kid Power program to 6,000 students here in Chicago starting on Monday.
So how does it work? Tell us what it is and how does it all work?
Yeah, so kids wear a fitness band called their UNICEF Kid Power Band. And so they are getting active to save lives. So every step that these kids take, whether it's in the classroom or at home or taking an extra flight of stairs, every step that they take will help save the lives of children who are malnourished around the world.
So when I started to hear about this program, it was just hard to imagine the scale of it because it's national, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So our kids here in Chicago are going to be joining 70,000 students participating in this program across the country. We're really grateful to our presenting sponsors, Star Wars, Force for Change, and Target, who have helped us really grow this program from 4 cities last year to 13 taking place right now across the country.
So this is Chicago's first year kicking it off, right?
Yeah, we're really excited.
So are we in competition with all the other cities?
Absolutely we are. And we highly encourage all of the Chicago listeners to be cheering on Chicago's kids over the next 30 days. So we really encourage everybody to check out our website, UNICEFKidPower.org, and you'll be able to see starting Monday a live leaderboard of Chicago kids' activity. So you'll be able to see by classroom and by school which classrooms are the most active and therefore the most life-saving in this competition across the country.
All right, so let's go in a little bit deeper and explain how this works. So kids are wearing these bands.
Yep.
The bands have Wi-Fi. Right.
They're Bluetooth connected to a tablet. So what's really cool about the program is it's an introduction to technology in the classroom. So teachers who are participating in Chicago have received a package. And in that package, there's a Kid Power Band for every student in their classroom. There's a tablet for the teacher that serves as a syncing and docking station for those bands. And that's how we are able to keep that leaderboard live and fresh. And then they've also received a whole host of curriculum materials to help really connect kids with what malnutrition means around the world. And why is it that every step that they take is so life-saving?
So what is it that each step buys? Does that translate into 5 cents? Does it translate into a buck? Like, how do we make money here?
Okay, so then there is a pool of funding that's been provided by our national sponsors and local partners and families everywhere. And then for every step that the kids are taking, they're accruing points. And those points then unlock therapeutic food that is sent by UNICEF to kids who are severely malnourished around the world. I found it to be really, really interesting and inspiring. Inspiring to hear that Chicago kids are absolutely going to help in the fight against global malnutrition. 1 in 5 of the world's children, or half of the preventable deaths of children under 5 are somewhat linked to malnutrition. And so this is a devastating problem that our kids absolutely have the power to help combat. And so we're really excited that they'll be able to participate in this program.
How does UNICEF choose where to send the food?
Yeah, so working with our country office partners around the world, UNICEF is going to take a look at which of these countries need this intervention the most. Unfortunately, mostly to lack of funding, only 1 in 5 of the children who need this therapeutic food were met in the past. And so we really need to engage the Chicago kids and the kids across the country in this program to help make sure that we're reaching those other 4 out of 5. And UNICEF then looks at the picture on the ground to determine which of these countries need our funding and our support the most, and they'll direct the funds that way.
So Monday it all kicks off. Now, you told me before we went on the air that you've actually gone to a school and you kind of saw how it was. You had a practice day.
I did. Well, it was awesome. I must tell you that we've been so excited to hear our colleagues talk about this program as they've been engaging schools across the country. We're so pumped to hear what Chicago kids are going to say and how what motivates them to be even more active and more life-saving. But I did have a chance to visit a school on Monday when the teacher surprised the students that they were going to be participating in Kid Power, and they were stoked. This is a classroom that has participated in Trick or Treat for UNICEF in the past, and so they're a bit familiar with the work that UNICEF does. But they were so inspired that truly, all they have to do is take an extra couple laps around the gym floor, and every step they take will be really life-saving.
So they get fit, and people around the world get fed.
Yep, that's absolutely it.
God, I really love that. And I like the alliteration as well. All right, once again, how can everybody get involved? You can buy these bands at Target, right? Does that help above and beyond what the kids are doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So the program is going to be a classroom-based program here in Chicago, but families everywhere can log on to unicefkidpower.org to get bands for their own family and replicate that experience at home. I'll also say to parents of students who are participating here, definitely check out the website because there's a whole host of resources there that really help connect this new generation of global citizens to the work that's happening and needs to happen around the world.
So parents, when your kids come home Monday, if they're wearing a blue band,
yes,
ask them what the blue band is.
Yes, ask, absolutely, and ask them if they want to run relay races after dinner that night.
All right. And then we'll get the parents fit as well.
Yes.
That sounds good. Beth McCausland, thank you so much for being with us
today.
Thank
you for having me, Elise. We're really grateful.
Beth is the director, Deputy Director of Major Gifts at the U.S. Fund for UNICEF, and Kid Power kicks off on Monday. It is 12:58, WGN 720.